This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Classes in session. Johnny Lupinacci, how are you, my friend?
Good, Tim. How you doing, man? It's good to be here. You know what? One of my favorite things is our midweek classes in session because we get to dive right into some amazing stuff. And wow, do we got a great guest tonight or today or whatever time you're listening to this. We're not even recording for a listener out there. We're not even recording in the night.
No.
I just always assume it's nighttime. But hey, you know, we got a great guest, and there's nothing better than when you can dive into some riveting storytelling that gets to the essence of what people are experiencing, whether it be good or bad. And you know what? That's been something that's been extremely helpful in teaching about the conditions that children and teachers are experiencing in schools. And Tim, man, our guest tonight, good friend of yours, he's got some riveting stories.
He's got some amazing stories. And in fact, you know, let's put it out there. You know, he was a teacher. He's retired. And this is the best part. Love when teachers get that book voice, puts together all of these stories, thriving in a public school. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Alan Levy. Alan, how are you, our friend?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So, okay, you know, we're talking before interviewing here, and I'll just drop this in there. You pointed this out, you know, talking about the fact that Jonathan Kozel said we rent there, 92, new book coming out. But, Alan, you kind of pointed to the fact that thriving in a public school, either there's inspiration from Jonathan Kozel's Savage Inequalities, or you looked at his Savage Inequalities and like, whoa, that's good, but it needs part two. Help me understand, make the connection between your work, Jonathan Kozel, and then we're going to dive deep into specifically your book.
Oh, I have great admiration and respect for Jonathan Kozel. And as a young teacher, it was a must read, Savage Inequalities. But prior to writing this book, I reread it because what I saw it is he was pointing out the problems. He pointed out the inequalities within the system. And what I try to do is offer some solutions, offer hope to teachers in a way forward to actually make changes.
Mm. Well, you put it in there too. Yeah, thriving in a public school. So right away, kind of coming at this from the positive framing. This is a compilation of memories from the standpoint too that are there, and in fact, you know, we've got a lot of different things. You know what? I just want to remind people too. Remember, we have that Busted Pencils mailbag. So before we even get deep into this interview, the number is 608-557-8577. That's 608-557-8577. That's the mailbag. You can drop anything in there, questions for Alan, comments. Hey, we'll even take your concerns. We don't mind. That's what we're here for. But Alan, thriving in a public school opens with a bold, bold statement at Hollerick High School, and you point out is a racist institution. Okay, can you share how the student activism at Horlick tackled this head on and what the transformation looked like both for the school and students themselves there? Question number one, Alan, dropping it on you.
Okay, so first off, it's Horlick High School.
Okay.
Horlick, it's very important to get that name right. People are very proud to be part of Horlick. It's a big question. What you just asked is how do we tackle the issue of racism in the school. Mm-hmm. Well, first off, a racist institution is, it really means that it perpetuates the status quo. Those who do well continue to do well. Those who aren't doing well, which are mostly minority kids, they continue as a group not to do well. So what we did was what I did to begin with was to begin to organize the teachers within the teachers union, because I was a teacher. I was a president. I became the president of the union to get them to begin to understand their power. And at the same time, I began to organize the students, particularly it started with the Latino students. I taught Latino American history. And we started to put on events where they began to build their leadership. And then we started to tackle major issues within the community. And we involved their parents. We hooked up with Voces de la Frontera, which is an immigrant rights group. And they became very accomplished leaders, both within their school, but also within the community. So they began to rise up within that institution, and they began to have power within the institution. So that was the beginning.
Johnny Lupinacci.
Well, yeah, man, I can't agree with Alan Moore here about this, the role that racist institutions play in perpetuating, you know, these inequalities and what we can do. Alan, big fan of student activism here, just activism in general, but especially youth movements. Talk to us and the listeners a little bit about the youth at Horlick and the inspiring and energetic work that, you know, you can read about in the book, but give our listeners a taste because it is really special.
Oh, it's a big, now this covers a 19 year span.
Okay? Oh, love that.
This isn't just a year or two. So there are very, very inspiring stories, but essentially what it boiled down to was first with the students, I got them involved in just organizing activities within the school. And whether it was a Black History program or a Latino program, they began to gain confidence in themselves. And from that point, we established clubs. We established first a Latino club called SUFRIR, Students United for Immigrant Rights, and then an African-American club called SUIT, Students United in the Struggle. And eventually these clubs came together, but those clubs were instrumental in the kids becoming organized and becoming here, getting their own voices, getting training and learning skills to begin to organize within their school and then in the community. So that's kind of how we did it. There were many, many very inspiring stories. I mean, it started out when it started my class in Latino American history, I tried to teach things that were relevant. Immigration, it was front and center because there were so many immigrants within Racine, within Milwaukee, within the state of Wisconsin. It was something, and there were immigrants in my students, some undocumented, some documented, but all the kids who were Latino knew somebody or had somebody in their family who was undocumented. So we started to organize on that issue. First, it was in-state tuition. And, you know, I'll never forget, the first thing we did was in my classroom, I had showed a PBS special about how Tyson Foods was enticing people to come across the border to work in the South in the chicken factories. And what it created was a tremendous upheaval with some of the regular, how would you call them? The people who had been there for generations. Mm-hmm. They didn't like the new culture coming in. The KKK began to organize, and it really showed what those folks were up against. And a kid in the class said, "Hell no. We're not putting up with this." And she said, "I'm taking tomorrow off. I'm going to go to this march in Racine it was a freedom march for immigrants." So I called the principal. I said, "We would all like to go." So she approved it. To her credit, she approved it. And we went, but it created this backlash because I was interviewed during the march and the local media picked it up. And there were letters to the editor. There were calls to the school. It was a big backlash. So I said to the kids, "What are we going to do about this?" I read the most racist letter to the editor. And it's in the book. And the kid said, I said, let's analyze this. So we used this as a class assignment. I said, "What is this person actually saying? What is your reaction to it? And how would you deal? What would you say to this person?" And then we brainstormed. So the upshot of it was
we were able to get, I asked the kids who would like to take the compilation and make a letter out of it. So five or six kids did, and they wrote beautiful letters. So I had them submitted to the local paper, and they printed all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it began, so they became involved in the community. You know, we then invited Christy Newman Ortiz. She was the executive director of Voces de la Frontera to the school. She spoke to the classes, and she told about a hearing for in-state tuition for undocumented students and asked who would like to go. So the kids, no, she just said, she mentioned it. And I said, well, would you pay for some buses? And she said, absolutely. So we took a busload of kids to Madison. On our way up, myself and Victor Moreno, who taught bilingual ed, we asked the kids to write testimony, and we corrected it all the way up. We corrected it. We gave them feedback. So we got to the hearing, and at the hearing, Pedro Colon, he introduced the bill for in-state tuition. He had a press conference, and the kids were just blown away because all the points that they touched on, he had addressed in his press conference. Well, there was a hearing, and Pedro said, look, maybe you should just bring one or two students in because the room is too full. So we said no. So we pushed, I pushed the kids in, Victor pulled them in. We got in the room, and it was jam-packed, and they were speaking. They didn't have any of our kids speak. So this Hispanic teacher, I say Hispanic because Hispanic is kind of a conservative way of saying Latino or Latina. Mm-hmm. It's a conservative phrase. It's a business phrase. And this conservative teacher gets up and he says, excuse me, in this meeting room, he says, excuse me, but these kids have come all the way from Horlick High School, Racine, Wisconsin, to speak. Would you allow them to speak? Their bus is leaving soon. So they said, of course. So they let the kids speak. I'm just going to tell this quick. It's a very important question. One of the girls was questioned, asked if she was undocumented. And they said, and she got very scared because it's a big deal to admit that you're undocumented. Or they said, are you illegal? Not even undocumented. So this little girl in the front of the room says, she looks at me and she's in her eyes, she's burning, and she's like, let me speak. So I call her up. She comes up and she says, I'm undocumented, and let me tell you what we do and what you're denying us. When she got on the bus, it exploded with applause.
Oh.
And this was a kid who a lot of the kid, there was a lot of tension between the undocumented and the first generation, because everybody wants to be American. And you know, there's a real stigma to being undocumented, but this completely, from that moment on, the divide was breached and these kids came together. And that was the story. That's the beginning story of organizing these students.
Alan, it's a great example too, of all of the stories that are in Thriving in a Public School. And just remind people too, we're talking to Alan Levy about his book, Thriving in a Public School. If you have any questions for Alan though too, yeah, our mailbag, 608-557-8577. That's the number, because with that too, you know, yeah, not live radio, but we would love to hear from you. Tell us what's happening, ask your questions, because we will always pass these on to our guests, 608-557-8577. All of these stories that come through the book, Alan, I love that you gave us a taste right there so that people can get a sense of this. I want to put this into a little bit of a present moment though too, because I'm feeling like what you're describing in here, and Johnny put this in the notes, this is an excellent example of teaching with youth activism, wonderful examples there. Could I do this today? Could I do what you just did? I'm thinking of a social studies teacher out there who's saying, you know what, man, that's inspiring. I don't think I could do that though, because boy, that feels like some form of indoctrination, Alan.
Well, it's indoctrination if it's coming from the teacher, mm-hmm. but it's coming from the students. It's their issue. That's mm-hmm. not indoctrination. That's
that's actually giving them the space to exert or to put their who they are to deal with their situation. Can you do it today? Yes, it's being done today. In Milwaukee, YES has spread Youth Empowered in the Struggle, which was the group that came out of this organizing. Right now, they're fighting for decent school lunches in the school. There are hundreds of Milwaukee kids who are working on that. So, yes, it's very possible for that to happen today.
And Johnny, I was going to say, Johnny's got a not indoctrinating. Johnny, jump on that.
Well, yeah, Tim. I mean, I like that you always bring that up because our listeners are always worried, and especially sometimes teachers believe right. You can't do this. And Alan hit the nail on the head. It's like it's the obvious for teachers that teach with and for youth activism, really for activism. They understand that this is a process that emerges from the experience of young people for their energy and their desires for a different future, right? And they want it now. And so helping them intergenerationally connect the dots, learn from history, learn from social organizing, learn from other social movements, and have a great teacher like Alan and his colleagues. And he just talked about, you know, students organizing around school lunches right now and all of these things. We're talking about this amidst the largest social uprising of all of our lifetimes.
Exactly. And, you know, that school lunch program or organizing came from John Fleissner, a very talented art teacher in Milwaukee, it's not his issue, it's their issue.
Yeah.
They came forward, as well as all the stuff, the Palestinian organizing that's going on in his school, from his students, not from him. And I think, you know, we indoctrinate kids when we don't listen to their voice.
That's right.
But listening to their voice is the opposite of indoctrination.
Man, Alan, you point out too, just, and I'm glad you said this, but the Youth Empowered in the Struggle, of movement that comes out of Horlick, you put this together. This is a movement that's continuing to this day, correct?
Absolutely. They're stronger today than they were when I was there. And the beauty of it is there are so many alumni that have come out of Horlick that are now top flight organizers.
Mm-hmm.
The assistant political director of Voces de la Frontera came out of Horlick. Kenya Coronado, who just got a PhD in political science, a tremendous organizer, came out of Horlick. Out of all this organizing, there's a lot of examples. We helped them create, to see possibilities. We didn't tell them be an organizer. We showed them opportunities by the networking, by their personal growth.
Alan, the book is Thriving in a Public School. Man, we've enjoyed talking to you. Alan, where can people go and find this book? This is your opportunity. Pitch away, man.
Well, number one, Amazon is an easy way to get it. You can go on Amazon or any of your local bookstores. If they don't have it, they can order it through Ingram Press. And they all have the numbers, and they can – Boswell Books you know, I went to Boswell and I asked them, and they said, absolutely. I would love to have a book signing at Boswell, but up to this point, I haven't had one. And maybe some of the readers can call in and say, as an independent bookstore, why wouldn't you have an independent author do a book signing at your store?
I think you just put it out there, Alan, and right there, 608-557-8577. You could drop it in the Busted Pencils mailbag. We'll make that pitch for Alan's book, Thriving in a Public School. Stories, real stories about youth empowerment and activism and the learning that occurred during that time. Go ahead, Alan.
There's one other thing I wanted to say. It's very important. It's not just about the students. It's about transformation of the schools. That means it has to be students and teachers engaging together with their community. Act 10 was a defining moment for teachers, public teachers. Well, we had busloads of students go to Madison for Act 10 and stand up for their teachers and rally all over Racine. It fundamentally transformed the relationship at Horlick and in Racine between teachers and students. They began to see themselves as allies. Teachers became less missionary-like. And more, we're in this together. That's a very important point in this book.
That is the point.
Teachers,
Yeah, Alan, I'm going to say, I mean, and you landed right there. And in fact, truly that is, and we thank you so much for the interview time, but thank you for busting pencils, Alan Levy. And now it's time for your moment of zen. To be hopeful in bad times is based on the fact that human history is not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act. Man, make sure you stay tuned for Friday's drop when we talk, you know, hey, everything extracurricular, first downs, Friday nights, and man, always, thank you all for busting pencils.